Hi, I'm Lucia.
And I'm Nell, and this is Totally Normal About That, a podcast where we explore various pieces of queer media and the things we love, hate, and love to hate about them. This week, we're feeling totally normal about the Christmas setup. Let's dive in.
That is right. It is the holidays. How is everyone feeling about this?
I personally am super stoked for the holidays, so we're going to have a great time around here.
Holidays indeed, and there are so many of them, and I'm excited to get through not all of them, but definitely some of them. A few good ones.
Unfortunately, we can't cover every single queer movie, but not this year anyway, but
yes. I'd like to think eventually, but they, you know, excitingly enough, they keep putting them out, like, faster than we're getting through them, so our list just keeps growing.
It's true.
It's wild to think the first one came out, like, only a few years ago, and now there's a bunch of them, and it's delightful. Like,
listen, the people know what they want, and what the people want are the holidays.
That is very true. We just want cute, queer Christmas movies. So, and holiday movies. There are other holidays obviously being celebrated in these movies, but for us, we are spending most of our time focusing on Christmas stuff this season. So,
yes.
So this year we're kicking things off with the Christmas setup. Which is a movie that the main characters are Blake Lee and Ben Lewis, who also happen to be a married couple in real life, which I think is just really adorable.
It is. And this movie asks us the question, what would happen if a legal gay met up with a lumber gay who hates legal gays?
Who's also a tech gay.
a lumber gay who's also a tech gay. One of their moms is trying to set them up together because they apparently both had a thing for each other in high school and, like, never talked or whatever. And they have to deal with the various complications that come up with this sort of feelings, that these complications, things like maybe moving to London for a new job and Fran Drescher's voice and, gosh,
you know what, though? The answer is so much cuteness. Like, just unending cuteness. It's so adorable and, like, sweet and earnest. So, in spite of that, there's shockingly very little drama or antagonism or anything in this movie. It's just them just really liking one another and immediately being like, yes, but you, though. Which I find really precious. So,
it's very, very cute.
It's quite sweet. I'm here for it. Like you mentioned, Fran Drescher is also in this movie, and she is the mom to Blake Lewis's character. So her name is Kate, and his name is Hugo, and he's going home to spend his holidays with his mother and his brother Aiden, and ends up inviting his best friend Maddie along. He and Maddie live in New York. And basically have, like, 2 weeks off over Christmas, which is just,
the biggest thing that makes, like, the least realistic thing about this movie is that these two grown adults have 2 full weeks off for Christmas, and neither of them are a school teacher.
Right, especially considering last year Hugo worked over Christmas, or, like, Christmas Eve, which, like, I totally understand, you know, the whole thing is he worked last year, they don't want him to work this year, but it's like a whole thing, like a whole vacation, not just like a couple days, which I find interesting.
And then at the end, Maddie is literally like, actually, I'm going to stay here through New Year's. It's like,
right. Yeah. She's just like, I'm just going to hang out a little bit longer. It's no big deal.
Girl, what do you do for work? Where's my several weeks off I can just afford to take?
Yeah. Maybe it's because he works at a law office. I know my law office closes around that time.
Yeah, but Maddie doesn't.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't even know what she does.
She works with kids in some... I feel like she's... Because she knew of the app.
Oh, yeah, you know what? Maybe she teaches. Maybe she does teach. I don't know. Anyway, she decides not to go to this tropical place with her family because she doesn't want to be the third wheel, which, honestly, fair. I've read way too many Reddit stories about people who treat their single family member as the babysitter on holiday vacation, so.
Right.
Felt. So instead, she gets invited home to spend time with her best friend's family. Which,
who she,
you know,
clearly knows pretty, like, she knows them all. She calls Kate mom.
Yes. Yeah, Kate, it, like, she definitely knows them. And later, when Hugo's brother eventually shows up, they talk about, like, oh, it's been a long time since I've seen you. But they've obviously definitely know one another and have seen one another before. It's just, you know, been a little bit. Primarily because Aiden is, you know, in the military and, like, was deployed overseas or whatever, or stationed overseas. So, it's been a while since he's been around.
And, yeah, he comes home sort of unexpectedly for the holidays. And
yes. It's also notable that Hugo's father passed away a few years ago. So, it's just the three of them, and obviously Maddie is there. And so it's kind of nice. There's, like, some reminiscing about their dad and some, you know, some nostalgic feelings. But it's clearly not the first holiday they've spent without him. So it is just more, like, warm nostalgia than it is, like, sad morning first holiday without dad kind of vibes.
Yeah. I mean, there's definitely, like, some recognition of how hard it can be to be without someone you care about over the holidays. But it seems like Hugo doesn't come home, like, ever, basically. So, this might be his first time back since maybe, like, the funeral or whatever. Because he's sort of going into the workshop and he's like, oh my god, you kept this, like, you kept this stuff or whatever.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's clear he, like, spends a lot of time, I don't know, talking to his mom or, like, having a relationship with his mom. But he's not physically present with his mom a lot. But they do seem, like, very close and, like, care about one another. They're just not necessarily hip to all the details of everyone's lives.
Right. I mean, I guess he is a legal gay, and he's been working really hard because he wants to make partner at his firm. So, like, he's probably been prioritizing that over, like, coming home.
And yeah, well, clearly, if he spent last Christmas there.
Yeah. So, I do like that throughout the movie, you, like, come to understand that Hugo had a really close relationship with his dad and that they were both into, like, woodworking and carpentry kind of stuff. So, which I think is a departure because sometimes in these kinds of movies, like, the gay son and the dad, like, care about each other but don't have that much in common or, like, don't know how to talk to each other or whatever. And in this case, it's, like, the military son who's, like, you and dad were always your own thing. And, like, I wasn't part of that. And, like, I didn't want to intrude on that kind of relationship.
Right. It kind of flips that trope on its head. And it's nice because then, you know, Hugo and Aiden have their little bonding time where they're kind of bonding with Hugo teaching Aiden the things that his dad taught him. And, like, it's just a very nice little moment. Notably, we're not spending a lot of time talking about Patrick, the love interest family, because
there's very little to share. Except that he was a tech gay who was, he was out in high school. He was, like, the only out kid in all of Milwaukee at their school or whatever. Which, Milwaukee isn't that small. But
right.
They treat
I mean,
like
I'm assuming
this,
it's
like a small suburb
high school.
Town or whatever. But so Patrick is a tech gay who created an app called Cassandra, which is basically like a Magic 8-Ball app that apparently kids love. And then he sold that, and now he's a lumber gay who sells Christmas trees with his dad.
Yes.
And other than that, we know nothing about him.
It's kind of hilarious because they describe it as a Magic 8-Ball, but the thing about Magic 8-Balls is, like, they don't predict anything. Actually, you just shake them and it gives you a random answer. And, like, that was kind of the fun. Cassandra is actually, like, some kind of statistical analysis model that actually, like, does predictions based on, like, data and trends and everything. So
you're entering
information into it. It's not
a magic 8-ball. Yeah, this app seems predatory. Is it selling your data to other companies? I bet it's selling your data to other companies.
Yeah, it's definitely doing something.
I am sus of Cassandra.
Right, like, at minimum, it's like, tracking and analyzing a bunch of data, even if it's public information, because they use it at one point to track for, like, the sightings of the Northern Lights. And I mean, like, weather
analysis. Which is also weird. Like, what do you mean you're using this app to, like...
Right, it's not a Magic 8-Ball. That's not how Magic 8-Balls work at all.
No, I'm so confused about what this app actually is, because it apparently just seems to be... like, Siri?
Kind of, yeah.
In an app form where, like, you ask it something and it'll be like, let me find the information for you?
That's what I kind of thought it was. Like, some advanced version of, like, Alexa or something. Which is why he gave it the name Cassandra. Like, or, like, why it would be named that in a movie like this. But then they describe it as something else. And I'm like, but that's not what that is. That's not even close.
I feel like it's fairly notable that he named it Cassandra after, like, if we can take a moment for mythology.
Oh, yes, please, share.
So Cassandra was a Trojan princess from Greek mythology who was dedicated to the god Apollo, but she was fated by him to utter true prophecies but never be believed.
Yes.
So, like, and, like, she survived the sack of Troy, but was murdered by Clytemnestra and others when she was brought away from there, and mm-hmm. was gonna be a concubine. But so basically, like, the whole way people talk about a Cassandra is like a person who makes accurate predictions of impending disaster, but they aren't believed. And so I'm like, why would you name your app that?
Yes. My friend and I always joke about the fact, or not, I mean, joke, but, like, you know, it's not that funny, actually, about how the tragedy of Cassandra is actually that she was just a woman who, like, spoke the truth. And so, of course, men didn't listen to her because she was a woman. And I just find it funny now that he's like, oh, yes, my app is named for this thing that, like, essentially predicts the future based on statistical analysis. But everyone actually believes it this time around because, of course, it was created by a man. So, like, you know.
Right. So, it's fine.
Not to get, like, too harping on that, on a, you know, very cute, like, gay Christmas movie, but also, like, if we're gonna take a minute, it's just very funny.
So funny.
The irony, I mean, this movie is, like,
it's very, very cute, and it also, I think, felt a little vague to me. In ways. It like I really don't is. Feel like we got a good sense, especially when it came to Patrick, of like his motivations or what mm-hmm. he really wants, or like, you know, he was cute, but who is Patrick?
I loved so many of the individual elements of this movie, but when you put it all together, it just felt like there wasn't enough. Like you said, because, okay, there are so many things I loved about it. I loved Hugo's relationship with his family. I loved his relationship with Maddie. We have a very cute moment towards the beginning of the movie where he and Maddie go to this, like, Christmas tree farm. Because that's what Patrick's father does. Patrick's mom is gone, so it's just him and his dad. And his dad runs this, like, Christmas tree farm over the holidays. And Patrick is there working and, like, helping his dad because he sold his technology and is basically retired and, like, in Milwaukee living near his dad and, like, doing stuff to, you know, progress the town with, you know, queer representation and whatever. I don't say whatever dismissively. I just mean, like, you know, various things in the town.
Right.
And so Hugo's mom sets it up so that he'll deliver the tree when Hugo's there, and they'll have this opportunity for a meet cute. It is very cute. Hugo's so excited to answer the door, he, like, falls down the stairs.
It's so funny.
It is quite funny. And he's, like, wearing a little tool belt and everything because he's, you know, doing home care projects for his mom on her little to-do list. And Patrick leaves his gloves there. So Hugo and Maddie have a whole moment where Hugo is telling her, like, oh, this boy that went to my school, whatever. And she's like, let's go return these gloves and, like, have this opportunity for you to meet him again and, you know, see what happens.
And they do. And Patrick's like, I've been looking everywhere for these. And it's like, well, clearly not everywhere.
Right. And also, Maddie is just, like, Hugo's best friend. And so she's hanging on his arm and they're finishing each other's sentences and, like, having a whole moment. And they very much look like a couple. And it's so funny because Hugo is trying so hard to flirt with Patrick and Maddie is trying so hard to help him that it just makes them look more like a couple instead of less.
Less like a couple. I know. And Patrick thinks she's his wife.
It genuinely at one point made me wonder, like, if they do this in New York, is this why Hugo is still single? I think it is. I think it definitely...
Well, and why she's also still single.
Right. It definitely is part of it. Do they realize that they're presenting as married couple?
The answer is apparently no, because they're stunned by this.
Yes. Yeah, because they end up... They consistently have to do deliveries to Kate, like, throughout the week.
She's in charge of, like, the party planning she's in charge of the holidays, apparently, in Milwaukee.
Yes, it's, like, their holiday association or whatever. They're actually, like, doing citywide celebrations of things. So, they're not just delivering a ridiculous amount of decorations for her home, although she apparently does go all out for her home.
Yeah,
but it is actually for the local train station that they are decorating for this event that is going to be going on in the town. So when Hugo and his dad, Frank, which I think is adorable, drop off stuff to Kate's house, like, the next day, Patrick is like, oh, look, this is Hugo and his wife. And they're just like, what? Like, so aghast at this misunderstanding of their relationship.
And it's so funny because, like, you'd think at some point Fran Drescher would have said something to them. Like, you'd think Kate would have been like, the two of you.
Well, she's clearly being a little more subtle about, you know, setting them up. It is very funny because the way she's the one who corrects it, and the way she corrects it is like, oh no, gay, straight, single. And then Patrick is sitting there going, who's who?
Who's gay? Who's straight? Who's single?
Right. So, apparently, you know, Hugo's like, I'm gay. Maddie's like, I'm straight. They're both single. And immediately Patrick is like, oh, good, you play for my team. Like, that's perfect for me because you are very attractive. And yeah, immediately is, like, setting up a date, which, yeah, I think is awesome.
Which he, like, then misses.
Go him for closing. Yeah, yeah, he does.
So, like,
he's obviously a tech gay and a lumber gay, but he's definitely not a time management gay.
He's not a time management gay, no. Hugo is the time management gay in this scenario.
Yes, yeah, but he's trying. He is the one who, like, initiates the relationship and keeps setting up the dates and everything. So, I mean, he may not show up on time for the dates, but without him, there wouldn't be any dates anyway, so I think we can...
I suppose that's fair, yeah.
...forgive him for that.
I guess.
And he does set up very cute dates, which I appreciate. Like, he immediately is making all of the effort, so it's very clear he's, like, smitten from the first second they lay eyes on each other, or whatever.
He is so smitten. which is really cute of him.
It's very, very cute. Yeah, so he keeps inviting Hugo for these dates. He invites him to, like, get hot chocolate with him, and then he has to miss that because he's making a delivery, so he invites him back to the Christmas tree farm, and he set up this whole entire little picnic for them and, like, used Cassandra to predict all of Hugo's favorite foods, and...
Which is, like, weird. Like, I feel like if someone did that to me on a date, I would be, like, so creeped out.
Yeah, it's unusual behavior.
Like, just ask me.
Right. Well, and Hugo thinks that, you know, Patrick must have asked his mom. And Patrick's like, no, I used Cassandra. It's just, it's so weird and, like, in the idea of, like, it makes sense this guy is, like, has this thing that he uses or whatever that he made, so he's proud of it, and it's all about he made this technology or whatever. But it just, like, I don't know, like, it's just odd, because the technology is odd. If somebody
was trying to impress me, and they used an app to try to predict things about me instead of, like, having a conversation with me, I would be furious. I'd be like, okay, so I should date the app, not you. You're not actually putting any effort in here.
Right. And I guess Patrick's whole thing is, like, he made this app, so it was like, I don't know. Anyway, it's an odd choice, but, like, the date itself is cute.
The date itself is cute, although I will say that, like, also, one of the things he has prepared for them is, like, potato salad, or, like, it's all kinds of, it's all this.
Yeah, it is
very... This doesn't really feel like good cold, does Hugo not have favorite cold weather cozy food?
It is very questionable. It is, like, cold cut subs and potato salad, and I am just, like, those are not winter wonderland food.
No lasagna?
Like, right, or, like...
No soup?
Right. Nothing warm. Just, like, nothing warm. And I'm like, interesting choices that were made. And he's like, well, these, you know, Cassandra said these would be your favorite foods. And I'm like, maybe you should have tweaked the question to say, like, favorite winter foods or favorite warm foods or, I don't know, whatever. Like, anyway, it's a choice. It is a very odd choice. But, again, like... This is what we do. We nitpick over the details
because, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Like, it's generally cute.
We're very like, picky right now about
choices.
This.
We are. We're being very picky.
Because it is very cute. And, like, they're clearly both very smitten with each other.
And Hugo's, I feel like we have clearly... to be picky about the details, though, because that's, like, all there are.
Hugo's, like, very flustered by all of this attention. He's not quite sure how to act.
Yes. Well, because his whole thing is he's, like, I'm here for 2 weeks and my life is in New York. So I'm meeting this cute guy and we're having this little moment. But, like, for him, this is, you know, just a short little whatever. He's just letting himself have fun while he's in town.
Yeah, so just he's having here for these a cute good time, dates. Not for a long time. Which is
this
unfortunate for Patrick.
This is also very clearly meant to be a romantic Christmas movie because they don't kiss on this date, and as far as I'm aware they don't hook up at all in the time they're there, and I'm like, I don't feel like this is true of all queer people, but I definitely feel like as a group, especially if we're on a time limit, we would close faster than that. Like, they just don't, and I'm like, I don't get the sense that Patrick actually lives with his dad, but, like, maybe he does. Maybe that's why things don't progress quicker, but I'm just, like, they're, like, in my opinion, I just feel like maybe they're moving a little slow.
If they've only got 2 weeks, come on. Also, like, they missed every opportunity for there to be some sort of mistletoe-related situation.
You're
telling me that Fran Drescher wouldn't have put mistletoe up somewhere in that house?
Everywhere in the house. She's trying to facilitate all the smooches. Like, she wants every couple together. Because that's the other thing. It's not just Hugo and Patrick that are, you know, bonding and becoming a couple. But when her son Aiden eventually arrives, because, you know, he arrives a little bit later in the week, he and Maddie immediately have a connection. And are vibing and flirting and having their whole thing. And it's a very, very cute, precious little B-plot that I just absolutely adore. And And Kate is just like, yes, I want both of my sons to be in these amazing relationships. And who better for my son to be with than my, you know, other son's best friend slash, you know, my pseudo daughter person that I already love so much. Like, let's just put them all together and like make this cute, happy little family. And she is all for it. I do appreciate that as much as she meddles, though, she doesn't like force things, I guess.
Oh, absolutely. Like, she clearly really just wants, she just wants them to be happy. And she's I think these are people who would make them happy. So I'm going mm-hmm. to create scenarios under which this could occur, but I'm not going to like be pressure-y about it.
Or like, I mean, I guess she just meddles in a more direct way. Like at one point, Aiden asks her about Maddie, and she could have taken that opportunity to say all the things and like, you know, push or whatever. But instead she's just like, I just think you should pursue this yourself. Yeah, if you're interested, now's the time. go ahead and take the opportunity. Like, I don't need to be the middle person. You could do it. Which is its own form of meddling because she's creating the opportunity or whatever, but she's not, like, forcing it. She's just not shying from it either.
Right.
So, meanwhile, there is this train station in town that is, like, historic and was founded by or owned by one of the previous like town elders, who Mr. Carroll, which I mm-hmm. of course that's his name. It's a Christmas movie, so his name is Mr. Carroll. And it was owned by this man, and he started a holiday tradition where everyone would go to the train station on Christmas Eve and write letters to Santa, and then a train would take the letters away to, you know, to Santa, which
pretty cute.
Is very cute. Also a choice. You're sending out the letters to Santa on the night he's meant to go deliver all the toys. Like, that does feel like very, like a last minute choice, but what do I know? I'm not Santa. He's magical, so it's probably fine. Anyway, I thought that was very funny. They're like, we're gonna do this at night on Christmas Eve, and I was like, I feel like Santa's in the sleigh already. Like, you missed your chance.
Santa's been tied up at the moment.
He is loaded up and ready to go. Your letters are not gonna make it. They gotta get all the way to the North Pole in the next negative 12 minutes. Good luck with that. But again, like, it's a very cute, like, friends and family, town tradition. They're having all the kids come and, like, write these letters. And it's just, like, this very sweet opportunity to do this thing that feels very wholesome and magical and, you know, beautiful and is, like, bonding their town together at Christmas time. And so, of course, the city wants to tear this historic building down and build a more functional train station. What got me about the conflict the whole time is they're like, yes, we want to develop this like very modern, usable train station. And the conflict is like, no, we want to keep the historic building for historic purposes. And I'm like, why would you not renovate the historic building to make it functional while maintaining historic charm of the building? Like, why do you have to demolish it and build a new building when you could do the things to make it functional while still maintaining as much of the historical integrity of the building as possible?
Very unclear. We don't know. We never find out.
That would be my solution. They don't actually mention a solution other than they don't want the building torn down, but then it feels like, okay, well, if the building is not, something is not done to the building, you don't have a truly functional train station, because this train station is defunct. Except clearly it works to some extent, because there is a train there on Christmas that pulls out with the letters.
Yeah, so the real question is, like, do you just need to invite more trains to your train station?
Like, what are we doing?
What's going on with your train station?
Who even knows?
It's funny because they set this up as it's going to be, like, such a big plot. And then it's, like, kind of a big plot.
The whole point of this plot is to get us to another plot that isn't really about the train station, but is more about Mr. Carroll and the fact that, like, he's a historical gay.
Right. Like, yeah, it's this whole thing where they're, like, searching for information about, like, why we started this tradition or who the train station even belongs to or, like, any sort of information about who it went to after him. And then we get this whole plot about these historical gays and, like, then at the end it's like, oh, actually this train station belongs to, like, the head of the party planning committee or whatever.
Right, and, like... It's all very interesting and very, and again, as I was watching the movie, I was like, I am here for this. I am invested in this because it's all these tropes that I very much love. Oh, I adore historical gays and the idea of, you know, unraveling these mysteries about queer people that obviously existed, like, long before they were recognized or, like, able to kind of live their lives in public and, like, having these... You know, long-term, I mean, that's basically why Mr. Carroll did it, is he had this lifelong partner that he absolutely loved and, loved, you know, Christmas. Spent his life, yeah, traveling with and everything, and that man loved Christmas, and so he developed these Christmas traditions for his partner, and when he passed away, ultimately left everything to his partner, except the train station, notably, which, yes, like you said, he basically left to this Christmas party planning group. They have a special name. I don't really care about the name. The point is, they're there for Christmas stuff.
Right.
Which I'm, you know, that's great. I love it. So, it also feels like part of the reason they're doing this whole thing is to, like, give Hugo a reason to stay.
Yeah.
Like, and do this. And they make a whole point of, like, hey, you could still practice law here because you are licensed in New York and New York has reciprocity with Wisconsin, which is, you know, where you're licensed in one state and therefore, like, your license is honored in another state. So you do not need to go through, you don't need to take the bar again in this state. You qualify. And usually that occurs because the state that you're licensed in is considered either equally challenging or, like, more challenging to get licensed in. Mm-hmm. And so they're like, you worked at least as hard, if not harder, to get your license. Therefore, you know it. And there's, like, enough crossover in the laws and everything. So they're like, hey, like, you could work here. Which is definitely Kate's way of saying, you could be a lawyer here. Mm. But at no point in this movie does he actually get a job in Wisconsin?
No, nor does he even quit his job back home.
None of that
happens. It's a little unclear at the end of the movie what they're going to do, because he's basically like, I know where I want to be. I know where my home is. And then it's like, but we can make long distance work. And it's like, so are you moving back or right. Are you moving to London?
Right, what are we doing? And it's very funny to me, too, because, like, okay, he has reciprocity with Wisconsin, and Kate is talking, like, he's going to come take on this case and represent them so that they can keep the building for the train station, like, so they can keep these Christmas traditions or whatever. But one, then it's just, like, one case. You know, you actually do need other cases in order to be, like...
No, just the one.
A lawyer with, you know, income and a practice. But also, like... Again, I mean, like... It's a Christmas movie, so it's actually not too much to consider that he might, like, get a job offer where he lives. But they don't even discuss it like it's any kind of plan. Like, they're just saying, I don't think London is where your heart is. And it's like, okay. But they don't discuss it like... There are other actual options. They just
are there lawyers in Wisconsin? We don't know.
Right, they make it seem like he's choosing between his job and love, and I'm like, but without any kind of actionable plan for what he's gonna do if he chooses love, they're just like treating it like long distance is the only option. And I'm like, but it's not though. You could actually work in Wisconsin.
clearly. Well, if we've got this functionally retired lumber gay, I suppose we could just have a trophy wife situation. We could just have a situation where he's, like, a house husband.
Maybe they'll turn into travel gays. And, like, be like gays. Mr. Carroll and his partner and actually just travel the world off of Patrick's, you know, money where he sold his company or whatever. Although he doesn't like lawyers because apparently he felt like the sale didn't go well. So maybe he doesn't actually have as much money as it seems. I don't know.
Again, they tell us very, like, we don't even really know why he wanted to sell his sell the app or, like, what.
Right.
We know very, except that he, like, regretted it.
Right. They give us a story with just enough details to be intriguing, but also so very few details.
Like, there's this whole thing where Patrick spends the whole movie being like, we can just be here for now and do this thing, and, like, it's better to give this stuff a chance, and then he abruptly, during one karaoke song in which poor Hugo butchers.
I mean,
have yourself a merry little Christmas.
It is a mediocre rendition of that song. He does actually sing it on key. Not well, but on key, which I can, okay. I can appreciate given that it is karaoke. Most people That's can't fair. Even sing on key.
So he does. Yes. He does do this. And during that time, Patrick apparently is like, well, your mediocre rendition of Have Yourself a Merry Little Christmas means that actually I think I can't, I'm too afraid of getting hurt and we can't try to make this work. And then he just, like, leaves. And it's like, what?
Right.
We have seen no sign of you having any second thoughts or any concerns. You have been the most confident Chris Evans discount man of all times, and then here you are.
It's so funny because the whole movie I was like, this movie is fantastic, I am loving this movie, and then they get to that part and I was like, huh, I don't know what's happening here. We clearly have not gotten enough stuff in this movie. Like, we just haven't gotten enough Patrick at all in this movie, because it just, if they had given us even like a couple scenes where it was like people telling him, like, oh, like, you can do, and he's like, ah, I'm not sure I want to put my heart out there, but he can't help it, like, he's really into this guy, or, like,
what am I gonna do if his dad could talk to him about this.
Exactly, he could talk to his dad, he could talk to Kate, like, he could have these, just, like, give me, like, two scenes where he's just, like, feeling his feelings, but no, we don't get any of that, we don't get anything internal for Patrick, we just get him being, like, the most smitten kitten I've ever seen. And it's like, all of a sudden, he actually has a single doubt and is immediately just, like, panicking over this doubt. And I'm like, where did that come from?
You don't, when why did that happen? Right. And, like, there's nothing wrong with having doubts, but we just don't get any interiority at all on what he's thinking. So all we get is Hugo just totally blindsided by the complete 180 that has happened.
Right. And, like, clearly Patrick's one doubt is enough to make Hugo realize, like, maybe he could be at risk of losing this relationship that he's so clearly emotionally decided to commit to, even though he's telling himself it's not a good idea. So he just needs, he needs to be the one who's brave and, you know, jump in with both feet and whatever. But I'm like, that's such a abrupt dynamic shift. And it comes, like, right, so close to the end of the movie that basically Hugo's like, yeah, I'm here. I'm gonna be with you. And they're like, okay, we'll try to make this work. And then they smooch. And then it's over.
Right. Like, yeah, I know that they just offered me partner in a firm and then were like, actually, not only are you gonna be our newest partner, we're gonna make you open a new office in London, which I just have to say seems unlikely, but
yeah, I'm like, okay, all right,
we're just gonna throw him off. We're just gonna throw him unsupervised into not only a new state but a new country.
Right, like, new country, new city, new, you know, role entirely.
Are you even licensed in London?
I mean, And I love that they act like...
It's a different legal system entirely.
Not to mention, they're telling him, like, oh, London. He's like, oh, yeah, I love London. I studied there for a year in college when I did, like, a transfer program to Cambridge. And I'm like, how is your boss just unaware of this?
Right.
I mean, yes, it is... Technically, it is possible that his boss would be unaware of that. That could be realistic. But you'd think when they're considering you, not just for a promotion, but, like, for partner, which I don't think people realize how big of a deal it is to become a partner at a law firm, because it's not just a promotion. It's like ownership, essentially.
Right.
Of a law firm. You're getting part ownership in this firm. You guys are partnering in owning the firm.
Yes.
So you have this huge responsibility now to this firm because it is part yours. Like, your name is on the door. You have a responsibility to that. Where if you are not a partner at a firm, you don't have that level of security, but also you have the freedom to, like, practice where and how you want. You could leave.
Yes, correct.
And you can't just do that once you become partner. It's like a whole thing. So it gets me that he's, like, so excited to do this, and then immediately is like, I don't know if that's what I want. But also they're like, we're going to do this and send you to London. And they don't seem to know that he has experience there. Or, like, he seems to assume they don't know. And I'm like, I feel like that should be one of the things they immediately took into consideration is, does this man have any experience in any foreign country? And, like, they should be looking at your resume with, like, great detail and, like, your transcripts and stuff. Because they're about to make a huge investment in you forever. Once you're a partner, they can't just, like,
get rid of
easily
you.
Make you leave.
Unless there's some sort of, like, you get disbarred or something.
Right. You can be let go, but it's, like, a whole thing. I'm assuming it's similar to, like, when, like, a professor gets tenured at, like, a university.
Yeah, it's really,
like, there has
hard.
To be, like, a huge vetting process for that.
And generally that, like, if you're gonna get, oh my god, yeah, it's such a big deal to get tenured. And even just faculty hiring in general in an academic setting is, like, so, oh, it's a lot. I've been on faculty search committees, but yeah. And then it's like, you can get fired for, like, cause. So, like, if it turns out you're a lawyer and you're embezzling all of the funds from your clients instead of doing the work, like, I can imagine that they would be like, we're not gonna do this anymore. But that's also, like, we get so little of him at work, we have no idea if he even enjoys being a lawyer.
Right. And I don't know, his whole argument is basically, like, they're telling him he's a details person. He's like, yeah, I found this way to, like, help these cases and save all this money and stuff, but, like, I don't know. It's such an interesting thing that he's like, I'm committed. I'm ready to be a partner. And then he goes home, and a week in, he's just like, I don't even know that I want that. I'm like, well, then definitely don't do it. That's a big mistake then, because that's a huge commitment. Like, you should know if you're ready for that or not. Anyway, it's fine. It's no big deal. You know what is hard sometimes? Like, it can be very challenging. Is we spend so much time in fandom and, like, read all these fanfics and, like, watch all of this stuff. And it can be so challenging because some fanfics are so incredibly well thought out and, like, researched, and there's so much work done to, like, truly understand all of the dynamics and the nuances and everything. And I'm like, ah, yes, I am spoiled because I'm used to that level of, like, thought going into a story. And sometimes for movies like this, they're just like, yes, this. And there's like Google level research that goes in just to like making the plot coherent enough to like work for a movie. And again, like as someone who just enjoys Lifetime, Hallmark, whatever, Christmas movies, I'm just like, I'm here. Like,
right. I don't question. That's the thing is, like, they're not making a movie that that's going up for like Oscar consideration for script or whatever.
Right.
Like,
they're popcorn.
It's not supposed to be a movie that you're like thinking that deeply about. It's just supposed to be a feel good holiday vibe. And that's fine.
And it is.
Like, it is. And it's like, if we were not watching it with the intention to talk about it like this, I think it would probably be a lot more of just like, this is so cute, oh my god, and less of the like, actually, you know, when we think about this, none of this makes any sense.
Right, but it doesn't. And like, it's funny because we're being very critical, but like, it's such a cute movie, and I loved it, and I absolutely would rewatch it again. Like, I would watch a second movie where they explored more of the stuff with Patrick and like, their relationship now that they've committed to trying, and what does it look like for Maddie and Aiden now that they're maybe gonna date, and how is it for Hugo and Maddie finally living in different cities? Like, I would watch a sequel, so clearly, like, it was very good, or we wouldn't be here having this conversation.
Right.
It's just so funny because this is exactly the same level of, like, thought and detail-orientedness that goes into any hetero Christmas movie, but we judge those too, so I just feel like we're just judging across the board. Like,
I did really like that. So basically Aiden is getting stationed in Indiana and coming back from Germany, and then like they're talking about like if they can make long distance work or whatever, and it's like, but and isn't she talking about, like, moving to Milwaukee?
No, that's the thing. Like, she lives in New York. It doesn't seem like she has any intention to move to Milwaukee. But, so she would live in New York. Aiden would live in Indianapolis. Hugo would maybe live in New York, or maybe live in Milwaukee, or maybe commute between the two. It's unclear. Patrick still lives in Milwaukee, which
Hugo
is
has made
is.
No plans.
Yeah, Hugo doesn't know what he's doing. We just don't think he's going to London. He could potentially still be going to London.
Love a disaster
game. Patrick's
gig.
Like, because Patrick's like, I could go to London. Like, why not? I have all this money.
I'm retired.
No plans and no commitments. I can totally do what I did before, which is pick up my life and move to an entirely new city for a boyfriend and just hope it works out.
Never mind.
And I'm like,
how incredibly difficult it would be to immigrate to London without,
to a
like,
new country?
Without any work lined up. Like, hi, I'm just a retired lumber gay. Okay, I'd
right,
like to live here.
He's essentially just on a never-ending vacation. Like, because he doesn't, not like he has a job there. He's just there to hang out with his lawyer boyfriend, who would be never home. He'd be insanely
right.
busy because he's setting up a new office.
Correct.
In a new city. Like, that's just, that's not the way to start a relationship.
No.
At all.
No. Hugo would never be home. He would be so stressed all the time.
Right. And Patrick would be so bored because after the first few weeks, like, it doesn't feel like vacation anymore. And you just want your boyfriend there. And he's just too busy for you. And when you start an entire relationship when you're essentially both on vacation, like Patrick is working for his dad, yes, but, like, it's the holidays, and they're just, like, hanging out while Hugo is on vacation. And if you suddenly just don't have any time with this person anymore, that's not really gonna work. So
no, it's not gonna go well, unfortunately.
I think it would make...
Well, and the thing is, like, so they move to London, okay, to be together. But then they break up, and now they're both, like, sure, Hugo has a job, but Patrick's just in London now.
Right, well, and that's the thing, like, I feel like he would just move back to Milwaukee. But that's awkward, because that's where Hugo's mom lives.
Right.
Is Hugo never supposed to come home and see his mother?
No.
Gotta just very carefully avoid Patrick Ryan.
Which, so yeah. I get, the thing is, they treat Milwaukee like it is the smallest town.
Yes, they do.
It's not that small.
That's something that's also very funny to me in these movies in general, is they just, like, pick cities, and they're like, ah, oh, yes, this adorable little suburb in the middle of nowhere, and I'm like, that is, no, it's like a city. It's like a whole
thing. What do you mean,
like,
Cleveland, the adorable little suburb?
The adorable little back neighborhood in the middle of nowhere? Like, okay. Which, I mean, I don't know, maybe compared to New York or London, that's how it feels, but also, that's not even, no, it's not how that works.
No.
That's how they were kind of talking about Indianapolis, too, and I was like, I don't think that that's accurate at all.
No. But okay. I mean, Indianapolis is, like, again, like, it's not a huge city.
But it's definitely a city. It's a city. It's not a suburb.
Like, you could maybe say, get away with, like, talking about, like, Broad Ripple Village, which is sort of a smaller neighborhood of Indianapolis.
Right.
You could get away with, so if they had talked about this being, like, a small suburb of Milwaukee, or, like, a small town close to Milwaukee, I would have been like, okay, yeah. But they don't do that. They're just like, Milwaukee, this quaint little village with this old train station and no gay people. And I'm like, well, I don't... I've spent a lot of time in Milwaukee, actually, and that's not what it is.
Right, like... Yeah, it's just... It's interesting. It's an interesting thing that's happening.
Interesting thing that's happening.
Yes. So, I don't know. I find the whole thing, like, so sweet, and then you start picking it apart, and you're like, oh, yes, this... It's still popcorn. It's just, like...
Yeah.
The difference between shoving a giant handful of it in your mouth and then eating it one kernel at a time.
Like, well, it's so funny, because you were watching it, and you were like, oh my god, this is the best movie I've ever seen. This, I might like this better than Single All the Way. This is so... Which, notably, was, like, our favorite... holiday
still,
movie last year.
Still our favorite and holiday movie.
You had, like, you were gushing out this movie, then I watched it and I was like, huh, this movie doesn't make any sense.
I was loving it so much, and then I got to the end and I was like, oh no, I definitely need another one. I definitely need a complete story. The story is not complete. That right. I need more. But I'm weak, and it hit, like, so many things that I like. It does have so many tropes that I love, and, like...
It does have some really good tropes.
They're so earnest, and there's so much cute flirting, and again, it's like, very holiday thing, and, like... But one of the things I love, because I'm very nerdy, is, like, they do have the whole historical gay thing, and they do have, like, very nerdy references to things. They mentioned Encyclopedia Brown books at one point, and I was just like, ugh, my heart be still.
Yeah.
And then... You know, like, they have these very cute, like, little picnic dates, and it's, like, that's very sweet. And, you know, there's again, the stuff with, like, the extended family and, like, you know, they're, like, all spending all this quality time with Kate, which, like, I really love. And they're talking about, like, it's not just them, you know, doing stuff together. There's, like, discussions about, like, building stuff up in the community and all of that stuff, and they, like... go to this cute little pop-up bar with, like, this, you know, drag performance and everything, and, like, that's really sweet, and so there's so many things in it that I just was like, yeah, I'm really digging this.
It was definitely, but I guess, like, very, very cute.
I guess in my head, though, I just expected it to have 30 more minutes.
Yeah.
And, like, you know, more development, and they get to the end, and they're basically like, we're just gonna try to figure this out, and I was like, oh.
Are you? Okay.
That is an incomplete story. I need a little more than this.
I do find it just so outrageously funny that they keep inviting Patrick to these things. They're, like, these family things they're doing, but, like, Patrick's dad can just fuck off, I guess.
It's so
Frank
funny.
Frank isn't invited to anything.
It's so funny.
Like, you can come to family game night. Just you, though.
It's so funny because Kate is, like, flirting with Frank at one point, and then he's just never seen or heard from again. And there's part of me that's like, I guess that works, because then we don't have this weird thing where Kate and Frank are having their whole thing while Hugo and Patrick are having their whole thing. But also, like, poor Frank, he's just, like, alone all the time.
He's just being abandoned at the Christmas tree store.
And he makes it super clear at the beginning that he is also single, and so that he's just single and alone. Like, poor guy.
Like, yeah, sorry, Dad, I'm just gonna go spend Christmas with somebody else who, the family of someone I literally just met again.
Right. I do also think their cousin Jimmy is, like, an interesting character. He just, like, bops up and just hangs out. And
he's just, like, around sometimes.
He's just, like, a guy. He's just, like, a dude that shows up and is just there for stuff. And, like, I mean, it's great. Like, I'm here for it. It's just very funny to just see him randomly pop up at times. They're like, go ask your cousin Jimmy for the key. Go blah, blah, blah. And, like, they could have just made him a person. Like, just another person on the historical society. But, like, no, he's definitely their relative. Who notably looks nothing like them at all.
No. He doesn't. But that's, I mean, it could, like, it. We, I guess, don't know what their dad looked like, or how they cut, they're using the term cousin.
Right, like, I just think it's funny.
But yes, it is very funny. Like,
random cousin Jimmy with no explanation. I mean, like, he's just a guy that, like, just keeps showing up and doing stuff.
Yeah, he's supposed to be Santa, but then, unfortunately, he's got issues and can't be Santa.
Right, he's got, like, the tummy troubles or whatever. Can't do it.
And so they make Hugo be Santa.
And it's so funny, like, Patrick is helping him pin his suit because it's too big. And, like, Maddie could do it, but no, Patrick has to do it. And Patrick can't go behind him and do it where it would make sense. He's, like, got to wrap his arms all the way around him and, like, hold him to do it. And I was like,
he's a tech gay and a lumber gay. He's not a clothing gay.
He's not a theater gay, obviously. Like, he's, like, not sure how to even work the safety pins. I'm like, oh, sir. Have you not spent one moment on stage?
Like, apparently not.
That is not how this works.
Yeah, that's
but
a bit unfortunate.
And like, every single time Hugo breathes, he swoons, which is so hilarious. He goes out here, like, reading to these children, and you can literally see Patrick planning their future family. Like, it's so cute. He's, like, picking out names for their future children and, like, considering what breed their dog is gonna be. Like, it's adorable.
He's, like, deeply smitten.
It's the most smitten.
Which I love for him, like, honestly. And us. Like, I think it's fun.
It is delightful. It's one of those things where, like, you watch it and I'm just like, that's what you want, though. You just want someone who sees you and immediately is, like, so in love with you. And
I mean, like, right?
Yeah, and, like, he just is. Like, it's just very clear. He, like, fell so hard, so quick, and he's just like, this one, though. The fact that he even mentions, I could go to London, I'm just like, oh, sir, you've known this man for, like, a week. Like, calm down. Oh, it's definitely something. It's so cute. So this is what? So last year we watched Happiest Season, and we watched Single All the Way.
Not happy.
Yeah, lousiest season for sure. It was one of those movies we discussed, and it was like, okay, there are some things in this movie that really work, but overall the plot is just very challenging because of some of the elements in it for sure, and some struggles with the characters. And then we watched Single All the Way, which we loved, like 10 out of 10, no notes. God. Tropius.
We were, like,
planning
a sequel for that movie. We had thoughts.
I'm still here to write the sequel for that movie. I would eat it up. I feel like this movie, if we're ranking them, falls between the two, but definitely closer to Single All the Way. Like,
yeah, I think I'd give it like a solid 7 or 8.
Yeah, like it's definitely like a solid B, like in my book. Like, it does all the thing. It hits all the notes. Like, I really enjoyed it. I had a great time watching it. I wish there was more to it, but like, I'd watch it again, for sure. So
I'd watch it again, but I wouldn't necessarily like specifically seek it out to watch it again.
Yes, if it was like
if it was on, I'd settle in for a nice time,
and it was there.
Or if I was like, yeah, I just want to have a holiday movie on in the background while I'm like doing chores or whatever. Like, I might go for it. But like last year with Single All the Way, I was like, I need my family to watch this, which they still haven't done.
Yes,
but I was literally like, hi everybody, this is so important. This is the best movie I've ever seen in my entire life.
Yes, I'm like, I just want to watch cute holiday movies and just like have a good time. And this one, this one's definitely cute, and like I really enjoyed it. Again, I think I would actually like it more if there was a sequel that like did more with it.
Mm-hmm.
So there we go. Yeah. Give me another one, you know, Lifetime or whoever made it. Make me another, you know, give me more of these two. So, give me more of Patrick specifically. I need his thoughts and feelings.
Yeah, we don't... we know almost nothing about Patrick.
Yes, give me his side of their relationship. So, I do think one of the best things about the movie, for sure, we talked about Patrick being smitten, but, like, it is played by a married couple.
Yes.
And that definitely works because they obviously have all of their romantic chemistry already, and so they come into the movie and they just basically are in love already, like for real in real life, and you just get that on screen. And so they do have like the heart eyes, and it's, you know, not put on, like it's just there.
It's true.
And it's very cute. So the chemistry works really well, even if some of the elements of the plot are like a little shaky.
And like, truly, honestly, who can fault a couple of gays who are like, we just want to make a cute holiday movie together? Like, go for it.
For
you
real.
Do that.
Right. And
the straights
Fran
do
Drescher
it all the time.
It. Right. Like, who doesn't love Fran Drescher? I was literally watching this and I was like, I love how they do this thing with holiday movies where they pick a character, like they pick an actress like that and find a way to incorporate them. So like, we had Jennifer Coolidge in the other movie. We have Fran Drescher in this movie. I'm like, I love that they have an actress that kind of has that vibe in these different movies. It's, you know, it's fun and silly and upbeat. So yeah, I liked it.
Yeah, I think it's a lot. I mean, I do think it's like just a lot of fun.
Mm-hmm.
So for all the nitpicking we did, like it is genuinely a very sweet, cute little movie.
Yes. What I would really love to see is, like, an actual, like, Hollywood network level, like, Christmas movie, like, queer Christmas movie.
Mm-hmm.
Because we're getting them on, like a Lifetime Hallmark level production and budget and everything. And they're good. Like, again, Single All the Way was fantastic. This movie is pretty great. But there's a part of me that, like, one of the things I love about Christmas movies is, like, when Hollywood really does it well, like, it's just got such a strong budget that it feels like all of those little details are accounted for.
Mm-hmm.
And it feels, like, very thoughtfully put together. And I want that level of Christmas movie production.
Yeah, I think that would be really nice. And so, we have some ideas, by the way, if anyone would like to hire us.
We do.
Have some pretty excellent ideas for cute holiday movies. Or actually not even just just cute gay movies in general.
So many, which, you know, I think we'll be excited to share here, you know, if anyone asks. We're for hire, apparently. But so that was that one. So if you guys are looking for like a cute little holiday Christmas movie and for whatever reason have not watched this one yet, then, you know, go treat yourself. It's fun and adorable.
Yeah, if you've got, you know, about an hour and a half or so and you just want to do something sort of cozy and curl up with like some hot chalk or something, go get it. And then watch Single All the Way again.
Yes, absolutely. And then, as per tradition, we are going to be mixing it up. Next week, we are going to be watching a sapphic Christmas movie. So we're going to be watching Friends and Family Christmas, which is about fake dating lesbians, which I am very much here for. So
yes, that's going to be so much fun.
Yeah, so come join us for that.
Alrighty, friends. We will see you then.
Bye.
Bye.
About That is a podcast hosted and produced by Lucia and Mel. Are you feeling totally normal about something we talked about today? Is there a piece of media you feel totally normal about? We want to hear about it. You can find us on Twitter at totallynormalat, or you can email us at totallynormalaboutthat@gmail.com. And if you are enjoying these episodes, please leave us a rating or review on your podcast app of choice. Thanks!